Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our post-fund drive edition of the Roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us. It's good to be back. And, you know, we go on about the fund drive and talk about how we can't wait to get back for regular programming. And it's very nice to be back doing the show as regular today. We missed it by about 20 minutes yesterday. So it's good to be back. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get ever started. We have a wonderful group here assembled. And then we will start talking about what is making news today. Mike Spain is with us, normally with us on Tuesday, but when it's like, oh my God, we have a show tomorrow and I don't have a panel, I called up Mike and said, hey, would you like to be on? And he said, yes.
Happy to be here.
Good morning. Very nice to have you here, Associate Editor.
And congratulations.
Thank you very much. It all felt quite good. Vera Carius Kelly was here last week, but I missed her, so it's good to see her this week. Good morning. Hello. How are you? And then you're gonna be away for a little while, but then we'll get you. Is her mic number four on?
Am I on?
Oh boy.
Maybe I'm not on.
Yeah, press that blue button.
Nothing is happening.
Yeah, we don't have. She's not on for some reason. Number four isn't on. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm speaking into Mike's
microphone.
All right, we're sharing your microphone.
Yeah,
how's
that's
that?
Good.
So
okay,
I'm
now
here.
Try yours now. Try yours.
All right.
There
can
you go.
Can you hear me now?
That,
wonderful.
That's
I'm,
it. Okay.
I'm definitely part. I'm included.
After a couple of days, things get a little rusty here. We have to work out the kinks. That's good. And Judy Patrick is with us. She is Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association, and we are thrilled that she is with us.
Yeah,
this
long
morning.
Title. I'm glad to be here.
That's your title, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but that's good. We could just call you Vice President.
We just call you.
Not to be confused with anyone named Pence.
That's right. And Alan Shartok, how are you faring this morning, my friend?
Huh? Boy, I tell you, I've you know, what happens is that you get done with something like this, and then you feel like you could be, I've often said it, pushing a marble across the floor with your nose. I mean, you get tired, really tired out of these things.
2.5 days, not bad.
No, it was very good.
It was very good, very happy. But you, I could see you were on fire yesterday, so I would imagine you are like bushed because you went full stream.
Well, part of the thing is you have to, as you know, you sit there and you get on at 6 a.m. and you're off a little after nine. But every moment of that time, you have to be thinking about what's going on.
So well, and then you did another show, and then came back, and then did the end of the fund drive. So it's a long. But hey, we're here, and we're happy, and
we are happy.
We
thank everybody.
We thank everybody from the bottom of our hearts, and it's very nice to know that that kind of love and support is out there for us.
Yeah, so best audience in the world, really.
Absolutely. So we will give you what you asked for, and get back to regular programming and talk about what is going on. A lot of stories making news. And the only thing I really had problems with in sort of going over some suggested stories last night was, do we talk about the things that we missed over the last couple of days? But then I figured, well, we'll just sort of get through all of that one way or another. The story, the breaking news that came out just a few moments ago is that the Chinese firm ZTE is to pay $1 billion fine, according to the commerce chief.
$1 billion, is it?
$1 billion fine. A deal announced by Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross ends tough sanctions on the telecom giant at the center of a complex trade dispute between Washington and Beijing. So ZTE will pay the $1 billion fine. And is there anyone here, and I don't say this, I'm just asking, does anyone here fully understand the story?
Well, ZTE, a few weeks ago, if you recall, was, I guess it was a couple months ago, was banned from doing business in the U.S. as retaliation for it supporting North Korea and Iran. And it was said their operation was a threat to the national security of the United States, and they were basically kicked out of here doing business. And it crippled the company, which is a Chinese-based company, because they rely on a lot of U.S. customers and they rely on a lot of U.S. technology and parts, et cetera. So a couple of weeks ago, Trump tweeted that too many jobs being lost at ZTE, you know, and he wanted to save jobs in China, and he was turning around, and they were going to negotiate with ZTE in China, and now it turns out they're back.
So let's try to remember that this is all part of what makes Trump so dangerous, the art of the deal. He sits there and he thinks, okay, today I'm for ZTE. Yesterday I wasn't. Tomorrow I will be. I won't be. And that's what his brand of either diplomacy or economic trading is all about. So that's what I think you have to understand is happening here. And that's what makes it so dangerous, because nothing the man says means anything, ever.
Well, on another note, I wanted to say that the other aspect that's interesting about ZTE is that its board had to be dismantled, and it now has a U.S.-controlled board for operations in the United
Interesting.
States. So obviously that means ZTE will operate differently in the United States, but I believe it is coming back to, you know, your comment, Alan, you can't rely on, you know, you can't really rely on what Trump says. One day it's one direction, the next day it's the other direction. I suspect it's a signal to China that the United States is willing to deal over some elements of the economy. And ZTE obviously wanted to operate in the United States and was desperate enough to pay penalties and allow the U.S. to determine the board. That means the customers that ZTE lost in the United States, it will have to rebuild but now operate under U.S. Parameters. So it's an interesting message to the Chinese premier in terms of what the future holds in terms of U.S.-Chinese relations.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you exactly about that question on relationship, because last month when the president ordered the Commerce Department to reconsider the punishment, he said this was a personal request from mm-hmm. President Xi of China. So what does mm-hmm. that mean about a relationship? And what did he say to the president of China? What was that relation? What was that conversation like? And then how do you then go back and say, oh, okay, this is what we're doing now?
But this story is not over yet either, because as you know, with fines can be suspended. So it's just another negotiating strategy as well.
More art of the deal, as it were.
Yeah, and we have that North Korea deal coming, and you need the Chinese for that. So you can't completely offend the Chinese. You have to put out a little bit of a, you know, an offer. So I think it's back and forth, and it's just larger. You know, it's larger swings than what we're used to seeing.
So I'm so glad we have you here, because, you know, I had not known about the Chinese board. I think about the American board. I mm-hmm. think that's really interesting. But in order to understand this, you got to think of Trump is sitting there. He wants to buy a hotel. He wants right. to buy a hotel. Mm-hmm. And he sits across the table from the other guys. And he says, you do this, I'll do this. And then he threatens that they either succumb or they don't. And that's what happens. You know, it can't be the same way in international relations. And you're the professor of that.
Well, what's interesting to me is we're so accommodating to our adversaries on trade, China, and we're being tough with our neighbors up to the north in Canada and to our southern border in
right.
Mexico. And those are countries that were, you know, are a threat to our national security.
Can
so
you imagine?
Imposing tariffs.
A threat to our national security. Yeah. And that's because, according to Trump, the Canadians burned down the White House, which they didn't.
Which, no. right, we just talked about that, right? That we had a good...
In talking to Justin Trudeau uh-huh. yesterday on the phone, the Prime Minister of Canada, the president evidently said, you guys burned down the White House. I think he was referring to the British troops.
He was.
During the War of 1812.
But he didn't know that.
It did burn down the White House, and it was a fight over who was going to, you know, control parts of Canada. So Canada was involved. He had that part right, but it was the Brits that did it.
But, you know, they all speak English. It's all the same.
That's true. That's true. They're just the same.
So what?
Just kidding.
Yeah.
Can you imagine
Germany,
the novel? The novel about how a president, the novel. I should work on this one. The president of the United States turns out to be a guy who is in the pocket of the Russians. This is just a novel, of course, in the pocket of the Russians. And all of a sudden, the president of the United States is turning on his closest allies, the Brits, the French, the Canadians, and basically doing the work of Putin. Now, of course, this is not so, right?
But it's just a fictional narrative that you're
idea.
Talking about. Yeah.
There was a, I think I'm keeping this somewhat on subject, but there's an article in the Washington Post this morning about the closed door FEMA meeting that the president had, and that this is a meeting that was about hurricane preparedness, and it was with FEMA, with the Federal Emergency Management Agency at the headquarters. And at the start of the 2018 hurricane season, they all decided to get together. Melania Trump was there. So it's a 40-minute meeting, a briefing session behind closed doors. And the Washington Post got a tape of the meeting.
Oh.
So the president did not talk at all about hurricane preparedness. He instead, I will read this as they write it, President Trump had a lot else on his mind during the closed door discussion, turning it into soliloquies on his prowess in negotiating airplane deals, his popularity, the effectiveness of his political endorsements, the Republican Party's fortunes, the vagaries of Defense Department purchasing guidelines, his dislike of magnetized launch equipment on aircraft carriers, his unending love of coal, and his breezy optimism about his planned Singapore summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. It's an interesting journey. It's called the land of the unknown. Who knows, he said. We'll maybe make a deal, maybe not. As they say to everybody, are you going to make a deal? Trump said, according to audio of the FEMA obtained by the Washington Post. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? He briefly referred to Puerto Rico, where authorities now say thousands died as a result of last year's hurricane. And the Trump administration was roundly criticized and then quickly brought the conversation back to himself. He never made mention of the Puerto Rico's victims, but he did thank the governor, Rick Scott, for helping and noted that the power company was in bankruptcy prior to the hurricane. And he said the recovery was a tough job.
Wow. Who was in the room? Were these FEMA officials?
Yes.
So the topic was hurricane preparedness and FEMA's mission to protect and respond when there's national disasters.
That's the audience. Mm.
When Deputy Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan began speaking, Trump within 10 seconds moved the conversation to negotiating airplane prices. He said the government was getting ripped off on ships and planes because the ordering process for the military is so bad, it's not a competitive bid. And then much of the rest of the meeting was spent on other topics, not having anything to do with hurricanes.
So who leaked it?
Preparedness. Well, that's a very good question, but it
sounds to me like Trump leaked it because he wanted to once again be talking to his base. He doesn't care about the rest of the country. It's the base that counts.
Well, and one point there is that we're talking about it instead of maybe talking about something else he doesn't want us to talk about. That's always a possibility.
Always a possibility.
So it's an interesting strategy. But I'd say I'd love to hear a psychologist weigh in. He probably has attention deficit disorder. He can't stay on topic.
He also seems to lack empathy for any victims storms.
He lacks empathy.
Yes.
He doesn't have the capacity for empathy.
Yes. I mean, it's just shocking to me that, for a meeting this important as a FEMA preparedness meeting, he cannot even focus for a few minutes on what is really essential and to reflect on the horrible things that took place in Puerto Rico and the way people suffered for months and continue to deal with the consequences of the storm. It's just mind-boggling.
He touted generic polls that show Republicans closing the gap in the midterm elections before dismissing the idea of generic polls. He said the Republican Party was down 17 points 2 months ago in one unnamed poll. Now he said that was changing. Quote, I don't know if that means anything. I've never heard of a generic poll. I'm not sure I believe in a generic poll when you have so many races between the Senate and the House. We've never been up in a generic poll, and now we're up in two of them. Republican Party, never been up in generic polls. I'm not sure I know what a generic poll is, and now it's up in two of them, so I don't know.
That's a quote?
That's a quote.
Okay.
It's
verbatim.
Yes.
Wow.
Who could make that up?
We can't help but laugh, but it is very distressing.
I agree with you, Judy.
The whole thing, it is.
We tend to make fun of this guy and his the stuff that he does, and yet it isn't funny.
But when these kind of things come out, it does sort of underline many of us our deepest fears. Like you hope something's going on in the White House behind the scenes of, oh, there are people there who know what they're doing. There are meetings that are going on that are being constructive. There are things that, you know, like the government's operating.
You really hope that?
No. You hope it because otherwise you'd just be in the fetal position in your bed and never get out. But when you read something like this, you think, oh, okay, well, apparently not.
I mean, you know, it is disturbing to think that they have a meeting and then they never discuss anything that's supposedly on the agenda. I mean, you would think that there are professionals somewhere at some level professionals who lead and redirect and focus on a particular agenda that needs to be achieved.
Mm. And we only have about 30 seconds, but just one thing. There is a line in this article that does, it sort of indicates that perhaps the person who leaked it was a longtime FEMA staffer who was just sort of like
despondent.
Blown away by what happened, and they were one of the people that
right.
gave it to
that
the
would
Post.
Make sense
but that
to
was
me.
It's interesting, and so I throw that out. We'll come back. We'll talk about more stuff. We welcome your letters as always. Panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Vera Icarius Kelly, and Mike Spain making up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We'll get to those letters in just a second. One of the things that I have to say is kind of fun about watching these stories is that, you know, you often wondered what was going through the mind of a world leader when they had a summit coming up or they had a meeting coming up of what they were really thinking. And now we really know pretty much how they're thinking. President Trump is planning to fly to Canada on Friday and has made made it no secret that he's not thrilled about that. The president has vented about Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as their trade tensions have spilled into public view. He has mused about finding new ways to punish the United States' northern neighbor in recent days, frustrated with the country's retaliatory trade moves. And Trump has complained to aides after spending 2 days in Canada for a summit of world leaders, believing a trip is a distraction from his upcoming Singapore summit. And the line that I thought was funny is, not funny, you know, in that sad way, that it may not be a good use of his time because he is diametrically opposed on many key issues with his counterparts and does not want to be lectured by them.
Right. I don't know what to say to that. It's just so disturbing because, you know, you have these summits to discuss issues and to process through difficulties, and especially if it is an allied nation.
To negotiate,
to come up with an arrangement that's a win-win, right? But apparently Trump wants a win-lose, and he doesn't want to be lectured to. Well, he wants to always dominate. He behaves like a king.
Yeah, it reminds me of one of the NATO meetings where he was posing for a picture with the other world leaders, and he kind of walked in and pulled some guy out of the way.
Yeah, pushed him right out of the way and got up in the front of the picture, right.
But I mean, the setup for this G7 summit in Canada is so poor because we're in the process of poking the eye of Canada, Mexico, and our allies in Europe, the European Union, and Germany and France directly. I mean, it's going to be a very awkward kind of time, and I suspect that some people will feel emboldened to speak out and say what you were referring to, Vera. You know that we're being mistreated by our former best ally, the U.S.
Mm. I take it back to the novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole question is: at what point will all these allies actually come together and make an arrangement that's hurtful to the U.S. economy? I think at some point there will be repercussions. They're not yet felt on the ground in various states, but they will be at some point. It'll just be a matter of time, and I really worry about those moments when that those, you know, repercussions will actually affect the lives of Americans all across this country and make their lives miserable.
And to the point of Macron and the conversation of what went on last week. Apparently, Macron told Trump
during a call that new U.S. tariffs on European, Mexican, Canadian goods are illegal and a mistake. And the president was not happy about that. And so may lead to this of not wanting to be lectured to.
Well, I just feel like the U.S. has surrendered its role as the leader of the free world. And this is another example. We did it with NATO by not supporting them strongly. We're doing it over and over again. And this is
climate change,
mm-hmm. Paris Accord. Yes,
yeah.
We're backing out of the TPC in Asia. You know, I mean, it just seems like we don't want to be a world leader. We want to go on our own. And boy, that's a bad path.
Well, when you say we, I don't really think it's we. I think it's he. And I think that's a big difference because I think the American people want clean skies where they can breathe the air. They want harmonious relationships with the rest of the world. Sure, we can get better trade deals, but you don't have to spit in their eye in order to do it. That's what's so puzzling to me about all of this. And remember, this is a minority president. This is a guy who didn't win an election in terms of the number of votes. He won in the Electoral College, but he didn't win the election. And he acts as if this is a great mandate for him to destroy all these relationships and all these good things that Obama did.
Hey, at least at this point, I'm glad he's going to the summit. I mean, it would be horrendous if he didn't go.
Well, it's only Thursday.
He could call off the party.
Well, it might turn out like the visit of the Philadelphia Eagles.
You
know, he might disinvite some of the members or not show up himself.
Boy, that's a story, too.
But you're right. I agree, Judy. At least it's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. We have letters. Let's go.
Thanks, Joe. James says, alternative ideas for job creation. It's easy to knock Trump's fumbling and most likely disingenuous efforts to save American jobs. But where are the Democrats on the issue? What is their jobs program? I constantly hear news of potential labor shortages that will result from tightening immigration policy, and these are never questioned. But don't we also have a huge problem with underemployment? People who get employed but don't have enough hours to support themselves, especially among historically disadvantaged communities? Come on, Dems. Without a viable jobs plan, Trump's BS approach is the only thing we have to cling to. Well, I ain't clinging to it, nor do I think he gets credit for it. I think that if you examine the trajectory of where we were going and the jobs that were being created and the economy in this country, you know, that was just happening, and it was happening before he got here.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a good point that the Democrats have to articulate a vision, which should be based on technology, should be based on green energy, it should be based on, you know, advancing, you know, trade negotiations with a variety of traditional partners.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, they just have to begin to articulate that more clearly.
I agree. And not only that, but it doesn't even seem that they're doing a whole lot in screaming and yelling about what the Republicans are doing and showing that there are vast differences. And instead, it strikes me this way. Maybe this isn't the case, but it strikes me that they're just sort of standing back and waiting for everything to just kind of implode. Which
may take quite a while, and then you better be ready to not be blamed for a poor economy then again.
And
right?
as the letter writer, I think very smartly points out, you have to have a plan too. I mean, you can't just sit there and watch.
Do you think that the plan is just let it all disintegrate, and then they'll have no place to turn but to us? Which I think is a pretty cynical approach, if that's the Democratic.
Well, that was the.
But I'm a Joe on this. I mean, I truly think, and Vera, of course, I truly think that the Democrats are doing a lousy job of articulating alternative philosophy. The Republicans had their thing; they were there every moment. The Democrats should be doing it, but they're scared to do it because they're worried about being caught up in some kind of an inconsistency that will hurt them, and they're doing nothing as a result.
But they're also taking, you talk about the base, Alan, and the president speaking to the base, but they're already taking the shots from the president about the obstructionists that are the Democrats, who aren't even in power. So if you're already taking the shots, well, at least put up a fight. You know, that's what I don't quite understand. If you're already getting accused of something, well, at least live up to it and come up with a plan and actually do some good constructive obstruction.
I sure hope that this summer they're huddling up and developing some more clarity for fall, that they'll launch immediately in September, because they better have something in place, right?
We'll go
to articulate a vision.
We'll go through more letters, but of course then we do want to address the primaries and what happened on Tuesday and what that tells us about the upcoming election.
Okay, boss. Russ says, different conclusions. Good morning, panel. Democrats are touting the Alabama Senate race as a harbinger of a new coalition majority. But if you are the Viktor Orban of American politics, you see a landslide victory for Moore among exurban whites, a reassurance that your ethnic wedge strategy is still potent. Well, we'll see. We'll see who comes out. We'll see whether the Hispanic population, for example, in all of these states, comes out and does anything. And there's always a temptation on my part, although I know it's not a good thing, is to say, if you don't come out and you don't vote in your own interest, well, then you deserve what you get. But, of course, that's not true.
But other people don't deserve that.
Right.
But to that point, though, what we are seeing that we weren't seeing before, though, at least in, it seems, again, this is somewhat anecdotal, but we are seeing people come out to rallies. We are seeing people come out when there are marches, much more than we saw before. And I don't know.
But not enough. And when you say
absolutely, and I agree with you.
To which I would say, Joe, so what? You know, they show up on a. I don't want to sound like Rosemary, but you know, I say, so what? You got a million people. They show up on one day and they go home. They carry the signs and the rest of it. Where are the constant pots and pans, which you find in other social and political revolutions in other countries, when something is so bad that they go out and they stay out every day and they bang on the pots and pans and they yell and they scream?
Well, I agree with you, but I wonder if just the compulsion to go out and to take to the street at all is somewhat of a harbinger of action that will be taken at the election box come November.
Well, the question is, where are they going out? I certainly have gone to two of them in New York City where you couldn't see the end of the line up by Central Park and the rest of it.
Right.
But are they going out in the red states? If they are going out, are they big enough to make a big difference? Is the polling reflecting that the very population that elected Trump the last time is the population that will keep reject him in any way now? And I think the answer to that is no. So that's, you know, right now, I would say Trump has a very good chance of being reelected president.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree, too.
There's a vacuum. The Democrats or the alternative to Trump needs to speak up. It may not be the Democrats and maybe some coalition. But it's still early in the way election cycles speed through these days. So maybe something will emerge, but I'm not sure who it is.
Russ says, different conclusions. Good morning, panel. Democrats, thank you, Joe. Joe put the microphone in front of my face for all of you who aren't watching. He's exactly right. No matter how you yell, you got to have the microphone. Good morning, panel. Democrats are touting the Alabama Senate race as a harbinger of a new coalition majority. Oh, I did that one already, didn't I? Okay, Peter says, of Trump's policies, we keep making the mistake of trying to understand Trump's constantly shifting policies as if they were based on facts or core beliefs. The only agenda informing his choices is his own glory, not what is right or fair or beneficial to anyone else.
True enough.
And Kevin says, thanks for all you do. Who are ZTE's new board members, and what relationship do they have with Mr. Trump and his ilk? Anybody want
to
guess?
Well, we need to pay closer attention to that, of course. That's not public knowledge yet, I think.
And Sean Patrick Maloney disappoints. Now, this is an interesting letter. I'm so disappointed that Sean Patrick Maloney has decided to run for New York Attorney General instead of focusing on retaining his important seat in the Congress. Now his Republican challenger is making political hay of his dual candidacy, while Maloney puts his own ambitions ahead of his constituency and the nation, and that's Jim in Montgomery. It is an interesting thing. I remember when Lyndon Johnson was running for president, and he decided he wanted to both run for the president and the senator from Texas. You remember that one, Mikey?
Was it 1960 get it and he got the vice presidency?
Well, who else did that? Lieberman do it?
Yeah, Lieberman. Joe Lieberman ran for U.S. Senate and he was the vice presidential candidate. Yeah, that was, and then in Johnson's case, he won the But Kennedy won, and he became vice president. Johnson became vice president, and it left a vacancy. You can't serve in both, but you can run for both simultaneously. It's kind of an act of faith that you may not be elected. And he almost wasn't elected vice president, as we know. It was a close election.
Yeah. Of course, it's piggery. Mike says, history and Manchurian candidate. Donald's remarks about the Canadians burning down the White House betray a woeful ignorance of history. What is worse, in my view, is willful ignorance, and to me, that is dangerous. I think we now know what he was doing in his American history glasses snoozing away. As to Alan's proposal for a novel, check out the Manchurian candidate chilling. Yes, Mike, you're right.
Thank you very much. That idea, although I have to say that the I was reading that story about the Canadians. The truth is a very complex story. Actually, it is not an easy thing to fully take in one gulp. But
you mean the War of 1812?
Well, just the whole okay. story. I mean, okay. there's a lot there. It's not as simple as.
Yes,
he was wrong, and which is an aspect of it. But I started to dive into it, and I was like, "Oh, okay, there's too much."
some people who were of Canadian, who were probably born north of the U.S. border in 1812, may have been among the British because they were British servants.
They may have gone to.
So maybe Mr. Trump was
Montreal
right.
Those, one time.
Those Canadians had come down.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other stuff to talk about, and we have a great panel to do it with. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics Vera Acarias-Kelly joins us. And Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association Judy Patrick is here. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Our wonderful producer, Sarah LaDuke, just came in and highlighted my script to note a couple of things. Please keep your, because she's the one who reads the letters. Please keep your letters short to the point. Reads them before passing them on to Alan. Keep your letters short and to the point and on topic. Don't include links. We can click them on the air. Don't use abbreviations. And please, 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 for God's sakes, please, proofread your emails before you send them. And and you know, if you send one already today, you don't have to send eight more. No. Okay. Those are the rules. You have a few more, sir, in front of you.
I do. Thank you, Joe. Jill says, thanks for making this administration tolerable with your astute observations and sharp humor. Well, I think Jill's letter is extremely well written because if you really...
No abbreviations, only, no links.
No,
to the point.
No, but if you examine it, if you examine it carefully, you really do see it is not exactly, could not be taken exactly as a complimentary letter. In other words... Thanks for making this administration tolerable are the first several words. And I don't think that's our purpose, or I don't think that's anything that we've done.
But we are here. I sometimes feel like I arrive and I come here for a therapy session because it's so disturbing every day that either, you know, I turn off all news outlets and don't inform myself at all, or I come here and talk with all of you about it, and I feel a little better.
Well, anecdotally, I mean, that's what we heard during the fund drive. The people who responded about the panel and the fund drive, and during the fund drive about the roundtable and the panel, was that they had a place to listen and express their feelings about what's going on and have these very visceral reactions to what's happening and a town square quality to it. And I get that. I understand it.
Mary writes, good morning, panel. Someone who throws paper towels to disaster victims is someone who sees them as expendables sitting on potential real estate. Our only hope is the midterms. And that's from Mary.
Yep, Mary. We just actually, Mike and I, we just talked about that during break, right? The paper towel scene and why, and Joe mentioned why that wasn't one of those images that we have seen, you know, emphasized like as one of the horrific moments of how little President Trump cares about people.
You think of the few things that you have in American politics and in fairly contemporary American politics. Mike Dukakis in the tank with the helmet on, bad. very bad.
Yeah, that really hurt his candidacy.
Doing that great. George W. Bush, mission accomplished on the aircraft carrier.
And a heck of a job, Brownie.
You know, if you want to go maybe a little bit further to the Howard Dean scream. Okay. And now you have this, which just every day there seems to be something else, and none of it matters.
Well, I think that's the point. None of it matters. That's where he's got us to.
Sheer volume.
Which, by the way, I'm not sure that Michael Dukakis wearing a helmet and a tank should have torpedoed his presidential career.
But he was ahead, Joe. He was ahead.
Right after the convention, the Democratic convention in '88, Michael Dukakis actually was ahead of George Herbert Walker Bush. And it was immediately after that poll was taken that he went to some military base and got the helmet on. And that seemed to coincide with his numbers sinking and never coming back up.
And he turned to his press secretary as he was doing it and said, "Isn't this going to make me look like an idiot?"
Yeah.
And they said, "No, sir."
But apparently, President Trump can do something like that, namely surround himself with generals and call for his generals to be in uniform, or surround himself with these sort of military images, and he does not come across as ridiculous.
You know what, Vera? We expected more of Mike Dukakis.
Well, that's true.
We don't expect that.
That's a great point, Alan. That is an excellent point. We don't, right. What are our expectations? The guy, that's a good point. Are we still having the parade, by the way?
I was just going to ask that. I thought that was going to be in May, and now we're in June.
Well, we're not doing a parade,
but he did do a ceremony at the White House this week.
That's right.
And he sang with the Marine Corps.
And he sang God Bless America. Yeah. He would be good to listen to the end of the fund drive and hear God Bless America with the words correctly done by Kate Smith. Isn't that right, Alan?
Oh, yeah.
didn't know them. That was the point.
I did have my one little experience with Mike Dukakis. It's off center. But I did interview him because he called. And his people called and said, "We're thinking about the show you're having with Mario Cuomo. Could you do one with us to see how it went?" Mm-hmm. So we did it.
And when he was still governor of Massachusetts?
He was still governor of Massachusetts. He made me ask 600.
Me and Mike? Was that the name of it?
Yeah. He made me ask 640 million questions, which he would answer with a yes or a no. You know, with Mario, you would say good morning, and he'd say, "What do you mean by that?" And he would launch into, something. So years later, I met him at a cocktail party, and he said, "I'm Mike Dukakis. On Shark Talk, I interviewed you." And he said, "Was I good?" I said, "No, you stunk."
I did.
And he said, "What happened?" And I said, "Well, you made me ask 462,000 questions." And he yelled across the room, "Kitty, come over here. This guy says he interviewed me for the thing." So that's how it went. That's a story. Anyway, Steve from Austerlitz, with the motivation Trump is providing, maybe Canada will try to interfere with the next presidential election. R. Jeremy.
Humor is our only salve.
R. Jeremy has written, "How come more jobs were created in the last 17 months of Obama than the last 17 months of Trump?" That's exactly what I was saying before. How come nobody knows this? Dems, we're going to lose.
Yeah, well, facts don't matter anymore. It's so hard to actually, because, you have to explain things and provide details far beyond this sort of a snappy one-liner. And people don't seem to have any interest in details and to deeply understand issues.
Oh, that's boring, Vera.
Yeah, it's so hard.
John says, "Strategy. Good morning, panel. New Trump Giuliani strategy." By the way, did you all notice that Giuliani has a 29% approval rating this morning? Trump has a 40.
Is it high or low? I'm not sure.
29, approval of what?
29, that's very low.
But
they keep putting the mayor in New York still? I don't know.
How was this tested?
I think it's
29?
Trust. I think it's trust.
But I'm trust. Not,
I,
okay.
I, you I think believe, it's what, Joe?
Isn't it trust? Was it approval and of whether people
trust
him? I don't know. I mean, 29%. Here's the point. He's out there in Israel this morning, and he's being quoted as saying that, "I don't respect Stormy because she sleeps with people for money." And first of all, I don't know if that's true. And secondly, it is reprehensible for him to be doing that kind of distraction, which is what he is doing, of course, on Trump's behalf. I don't think people like him. And John says, strategy. Good morning, panel. New Trump-Giuliani strategy. One, encourage public fury over Sessions' baby jails. Two, public ready for Sessions' dismissal. Three, out goes Jeff. Four, Republicans approve appointment of new attorney general. Then what? Also, running out of empty Walmarts, how about Guantanamo? John in Sandyfield.
He has, okay, I just found the poll. Quinnipiac University poll released Wednesday. He has a 29% favorability rating among American voters.
Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani, the former New York mayor.
Yeah, I'm just glad Giuliani's not attorney general.
Yeah, well, something happened there.
But let's see, because
it could all change.
There's another Sessions fight going under.
Yeah.
One more letter, and then we'll go to news.
There is only one more letter, so you're lucky. Keith says 24% increases in New York State health insurance premiums. Good morning, panel. On Monday, I was announced that on average, insurers are asking 24% increases on health insurance premiums in New York. They blame the majority of the price increase on the GOP's tax cut bill that removed the individual mandate. Thanks, FASO, it says here. And that's from Keith.
All right. We'll take a break there. And when we come back, we will have more discussion. And we'll, of course, welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. And we love having you. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Vera Carius Kelly, and Mike Spain making up our post-fund drive panel this morning. Alan has a fistful of letters.
I do. And just to remember, everybody, I think this is very important. When we read these are letters that are written by people like yourselves. They do not reflect what we may be thinking here. Somebody wants to write a letter saying John Faso's bad, we read it. Somebody wants to write a letter saying John Faso's good, we read that. So let's try to remember that as I read.
Alan, I like the fact that you emphasize these are letters written by people. What do you mean? By bots is the other alternative?
Not by machine.
Yeah, by bots. Okay.
No.
By machine.
None of the following letters have been written by Russian robots.
I was like, what?
All I know is I can't wait to hear the next letter.
Raphael says, Sean Patrick Maloney, good morning, wonderful people. Like the previous letter, I too was shocked and disappointed to get an email from Congressman Maloney yesterday asking for money to run for AG of New York. Mm. We need him where he is. Why does ego and ambition always ruin people? And that's from Raphael. I'd like to speak to that for a moment. Now, you know, I have my own concerns about this particular issue. I'm not happy about many of the people who are running for attorney general who are there. But, you don't determine what the mix is. In Maloney's case, I had hoped, because I've asked him on the Congressional Corner 1,000 times, about Andrew Cuomo when he makes what I consider to be some very fallible mistakes. And he's always been devoted in terms of his rhetoric to Cuomo. Now we have Tish James, who is running. She's a woman of color. She's a woman. But she, too, is seriously compromised, in my mind, by the people who she'll have to be policing being the endorsers of her. I know that's not proper English, but it is something that.
But hasn't that always been?
I mean, look. If you have a Preet Bharara Joe, if he were to run, he would win for sure, because people know that he's his own person. That he's willing to take on institutions. He indicted all those people around Cuomo. So if he ran, he'd win. And I think people know it. So I'm not happy with the class of people. I mean, when I say class, I mean the number of people who are running, because I don't see anybody doing what they need to be doing or saying in order to protect the public interest.
So it's important to remember that the Democratic primary, because of the numbers in New York State,
yes,
the Democratic primary is the election for attorney general. You know, I mean, that's essentially where it will be. A Republican candidate has a very low chance of defeating a Democrat in New York. So the primary is the actual election.
Well, I like the last thing you said.
Yeah.
Low chance.
Yeah.
Because you may remember we had Dennis Vacco as the Attorney General of New York a number of years ago. And he, you know, as Gene Shalit said of the movie Ishtar, Ishtar is terrible. And And he was.
And Dennis Vaca was his star. Is that what you're saying?
But can you talk about why someone would rather be attorney general than a congressman?
Oh, yeah, because it's a statewide constituency, and you're so right, Judy, because you've set me up with that beautiful fastball. You can give the answer. Go ahead.
Well, it's a stepping stone.
It's the stepping stone to governor. Everybody knows, you know, Spitzer became governor, Andrew Cuomo became governor. So if you become the, and then it's the next stepping stone is to
president. And is that congressional district vulnerable?
Yes. Oh, it's a very vulnerable. It could go either way. No question.
But
about
he is
it.
Retaining his that he's seat. Running for Congress. So if he loses the primary in September, he's still all set to compete for re-election.
Which brings up the key and central point, at least in my mind, which I asked Alan to his face yesterday while we were just in a break,
and not behind my back, but to my face,
to your face. Why haven't we heard from Preet Bharara yet?
I don't know. I don't know. I have such admiration for the guy. Somebody wrote me a letter and said, under the Constitution, because he didn't register to vote for a couple of elections, you know, many politicians or journalists don't register because they don't want to
be affiliated in a particular party.
He's not eligible to run. So yesterday, when we had Jesse McKinley, who is a terrific Times reporter on the Capitol Connection, yesterday he said, no, that's not true. So he can run if he wants to run, but he would have to collect
enroll.
Petitions.
And
can you imagine if Andrew Cuomo heard that Preet Bharara, who indicted his, quote, brother, best friend, and all those other people, Todd Howe, around him, heard that Preet was running? I don't think he'd be
now,
all that happy.
There's another school of thought on it, though, and people have said this, that if Preet Bharara were to enter into a partisan political race, he would lose that stature that he has. He'd become just another politician. He'd have to negotiate for endorsements, and he'd be just as tainted as everybody else, and he wants to stay above that.
Now, you're right. That is another school of thought. It just happens to be wrong.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Susan says, Trump's parade. Good
yeah,
morning,
Mike.
Panel.
But, go ahead.
Good morning, panel. Congratulations on the fundraiser. Trump's parade is being talked about to occur near Veterans Day in November.
Uh-huh.
I predict he will have a bigger turnout than at his inauguration. That's impossible. He had the biggest turnout in the inauguration of any... That was a lie. Remember that one? Or let him know how we feel about him, his generals, and military parades that waste millions to make him feel like a big man. And that's Susan from Sunderland.
All right.
Well...
All right. Anonymous. Stephanie. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I'm extremely hopeful that young adults will be impactful on the elections. When I see the marches on the Capitol about gun control and how now they can vote in a little while, it seems like they are really engaged. What is your opinion? Well, you know, as somebody who taught in a classroom for 40 years, and Vera, I'm very interested in what you have to say about this, and hectored and lectured and yelled to our people to get out there and register. We used to say the only way to get them out of the dorm room during election day was a bomb threat. You couldn't, they wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't do it. I hope you're right. I hope this signifies a change. I just don't know. Vera, what do you think?
Yeah, so we use a totally different approach. We have student clubs organize other students to register to vote. So
golf
faculty
clubs?
Are not very involved in that at all because I think
well, that
we'd like
was
to
an
keep our distance. Yeah, I just mean like I wouldn't even mention that in class. That is a club activity. That's a student club activity to get other students to be engaged and to invite them to events and speak outs. And you know, this is sort of a student self-organized approach. And I think that actually works so much better.
Well, I don't know that, first of all, I don't know that it was the philosophy of the school, New Paltz, that I was teaching at, to do that. I know that I was teaching American government and politics.
Yes.
And I remember I used to ask a question. How many people in this room, say, let's say 200 kids sitting there, how many people in this room remember, can tell me the name of their two state legislators, and don't lie because I'm going to call on you. So a couple of hands went up, and one person said, you know, something was wrong. And that was it. And then I said, okay, now, let me ask you the next question. What if your representative voted what you consider to be wrong on the abortion question? What would you do? And they all started to yell, we'll throw him out. And I said, how can you throw him out? You don't know who he is. So there is a disappointment with young people getting involved enough. I was a professor of American government and politics, and believe me, I wanted to make that point to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Joseph says, rare agreement. Good morning, panel. I wholeheartedly agree with Alan on the charge that the Dems aren't doing anything to counter the Trump barrages. Unfortunately, they cannot point out the vast difference between themselves and the Republican because there isn't much difference anymore. Both capitalized parties are entrenched in a quid pro quo scenario where they are afraid to upset the donors. That is corporate interests that really run the country. We the people are no capital letters longer being represented. And that is from Joseph. I don't agree with Joseph because I think there's a lot of people like Bernie Sanders who are different from other people who are tools of the, you know, of the establishment, no question. Anthony says, time to boycott all Trump. All the media does is stroke Trump's narcissism. That's all. Come on now, Anthony. All the media does is to stroke Trump's narcissism. I don't think that's fair.
Well, they do it, but that's not all they do.
No, and some of them do it, but there's been an awful lot of criticism. That can't be stroking his narcissism, can it?
Some argument that no matter what you say about him is the fact that you're talking about him, even in a negative way, strokes his narcissism.
Yeah, I mean, the airwaves in particular are dominated by conversations about Trump as if no other local or regional issues or global issues matter.
True.
And I think that's one of those particular issues that I find awfully tiring and disappointing, because there are so many things that are happening all over this country and all over the world that we should pay attention to. But we're exhausted by Trumpistan. This domination of
Trumpistan.
It's
like
Trumpistan.
Okay, you make a point. You make a very good point. Thank you, Anthony. Oh, he says, time to stop speaking about him. Yeah, you're going to stop speaking about the President of the United States and start to pound the airwaves with all the ills his administration is perpetrating on the United States. Hey, I turn on CNN and I see it hour after hour. It isn't as if those ills aren't being spoken of. Mary Jo says, Vera's thoughts on U.S. Ambassador to Germany. You've already talked about that.
Well, no, we talked about it in the break, I think. Mike and I.
No, I mentioned it earlier. Remember when I said the ambassador to Germany?
Well, he has said things that embolden the right wing movements in Germany and in Europe, which is.
It's just shocking because he seems to see himself not in the role of an ambassador, but as an advocate for particular political positions. And, you know, of course, Trump is happy with his performance, whereas everybody else is saying this is despicable and he should be just representing the United States instead of advancing, right-wing political positions related to immigration or other kinds of nationalistic utterances or, anti-integration policies. I mean, the whole question here is, in what world do ambassadors get themselves involved in other nations' political
internal
affairs?
Internal politics.
Internal politics.
Yeah. Ordinarily, they steer clear, and that's what diplomacy usually is.
You would think, right? But not today.
Okay. Thank you for that, Vera. Mm. And now Paul says, limited discussion about Trump. I think it's important to talk of all the foibles of the president. He's an embarrassment and a danger in so many ways. But if you overly obsess with it and consumes your program and the value that you can bring to other pressing issues such as health insurance, which so weighs on the middle minds of America, on the minds of millions of Americans when they talk about the truths that a Medicare for All program would provide to alleviate the anxiety so many people feel every day on this issue. And that's Paul from Slingerlands.
Yeah. But he presents a dilemma. I mean, how can you talk about the yesterday it was reported that the Medicare
Medicare and the Social Security uh-huh. trust funds are in trouble, especially the Medicare one. It might run out in the next 8 years. I mean, that's really bad news for anybody who's going to be 65 in the next 8 years. And the reason, one of the big reasons is they're not doing anything about it. They're pulling the individual mandate, which means a lot more people will now not be insured. And then the cost of that is going to be spread on all the insurance companies, and all the prices are going up for insurance. And it, I mean, those are Trump policies that are partly, not completely, partly responsible. And nobody's doing anything about it. How can you not talk about Trump?
Of course, you're right.
All right, let's go to other stories. We have 2 minutes, so we'll go to a story, I guess. How weird is the mystery ailment story? The medical mystery, mm-hmm. which is growing as U.S. consulate workers in China fall ill. A crisis over a mysterious ailment sickening American diplomats and their families, which began in Cuba and recently appeared in China, has widened as the State Department evacuated at least 2 more Americans from China on Wednesday. The Americans who were evacuated worked at the American consulate in the southern part of China, and their colleagues and family members are being tested by a State Department medical team. It is unclear how many of them are exhibiting symptoms, but a State Department spokesperson said Wednesday evening that a number of individuals have been sent to the United States for further testing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting to me is the fact that the United States discontinued its relations, its improved relations with Cuba over, in part, this issue, because the accusation was that the Cuban government had targeted U.S. diplomats and harmed them physically.
Correct.
With this mystery illness. But now it turns out maybe it wasn't the Cubans. If this, you know, we have an unidentified illness and all kinds of serious medical issues, but now it appears in China.
Well, is it somebody else trying to ruin the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba, in that case, and the U.S. and China? I mean, is it a third interloper here that is successful, evidently, mm-hmm. in making relations between these two countries sour even yeah. more? I mean, it could be that.
You're right. I thought that when they discontinued relations with Cuba that they had some really strong evidence that there was a direct cause and effect
right.
relationship,
yeah.
but this brings that into question.
It does.
It does, indeed. And, you know, there's some lack of clarity on what the condition actually is. It sounds like there's hearing loss, balance issues. There are some, you know, confusion that people feel as a sense of, you know, this exposure to strange sounds that are described by different people in different ways. So it's quite disturbing, I have to say, if the diplomatic corps and bureaucratic employees are being targeted by another nation like that. And, you know, right now, I guess from what I gather, both China and Russia are high on the list. So the Cubans are not responsible, apparently, now we find out.
Well, we'll leave it there. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody who participated, to Mike and Vera. Judy, Alan, thanks, you all.
And thank you, Joe, for your hard work in the fund drive. You were great.
Right back to you. Thank you so much. And we'll be back with more show right after this.